Okay, as you know, over the last month, we've been looking at what Proverbs has to teach us in relation to money and wealth. So something cool happened this week as I was preparing for the message. On Tuesday morning, about 9:30, I hear an email come in. And I thought, oh, I don't usually check my emails when I'm working on my sermon, but I thought I'll just check this one and see what it is. And I looked, and it was from RBC. And so if we can throw the PowerPoint up there, Kevin. This is what RBC sent me at 9:30 on Tuesday morning. How Canadians teach their kids about money. Now that's important, because remember what Proverbs primarily was written for. There's a discipleship manual for children to help parents, those who are wise, teach their kids how to live wisely. So anyway, this is what they said. With the cost of living on the rise, it's natural for parents to feel concerned about their kids' financial future. So kids, you need to listen to this because this is written to you. If this sounds like you, you're not alone. Mido, a money management app for kids and teens, surveyed Canadian parents about how they think about financial literacy for their kids. 90% of parents said that basic money management is the main skill they hope their kids will learn before growing up. 49% of parents said their kids are more curious and motivated to learn about money than they were at the same age. 68% of parents wish their own parents had taught them more about managing finances. And so that would be, kids, if you look around this room, that's your parents saying that, right? On the average, they wish that their parents taught them more about money. And so they ask this question at the end, what can parents do? What can parents do? And so they gave some good suggestions, and I didn't think anything was too wrong with them. But here's what's really cool. What can parents do? They can teach them Proverbs. Right? That's what we're here for. They can teach them Proverbs. And so that's what we've been learning over the last 4 weeks. We've looked at things like what the dangers of money, why people go after it. We spoke about honoring the Lord from our finances. We looked at four principles last week, which I'd just like to review with you now. So if we can put those up as well, that'd be good. So this is what we learned last week. Pursue your primary income from work, not quick fix schemes. Be sure to save. Thanks to Steve Martin, he gave us some good advice. Both parents and grandparents are to save in order to pass down an inheritance. An inheritance needs to be passed down slowly. And just so you know, on principle three, Jeff and I have been doing some preliminary conversations. We are going to try to do something to host, probably at his house, a spreadsheet about how to save now, so that by the third or fourth generation, every single kid from that day forward, by the third or fourth generation, will be mortgage free. Meaning they won't even put a mortgage down. If they obey God's principles, by the third or fourth generation, people won't even have to have a mortgage because it'll be completely paid for because of grandparents and parents' wisdom. And so we're going to look at that together as a church. All right, so then today we begin with principle number five. Principle five, and that is, do not be deceptive with your financial situation for the sake of personal gain. Proverbs 13:7. There is one who pretends to be rich but has nothing. Another pretends to be poor but has great wealth. Now, I used to think that this meant something different. If you sat under my counsel over the last few years, I used to think this was teaching that you're to live within the reality of your means. So don't overspend, always look to save, and don't go beyond your budget. But I actually think it's different now, and I'm convinced because of the word pretend. The word pretend. You can pretend to be rich but have nothing. You can also pretend to be poor but have great wealth. So what is pretending? What is pretending? Pretending is to give an illusion about something. It's to be a faker, to give a facade. That's what pretending is. It's not the reality, it's an illusion to the reality. So how does someone, therefore, pretend to be rich and pretend to be poor? Well, hopefully your mind's already going in that direction. But let's start with the person who pretends to be rich. This is the person we spoke about in sermon number one. It's the reason why people pursue money. They often, they believe that through wealth, there's a means of having security or a sense of significance. But the person who pretends to be rich really doesn't participate in or partake of anything that really gives the suggestion that they're poor. So they always want to put the facade on that they're really wealthy and never give anybody the idea that they don't have much. So this is the kind of person, for example, that says, I'm the kind of guy that'll never take the bus. Only poor people take the bus. I'm the kind of guy that does Uber or the taxi, right? I won't wear those clothes. Only sort of poor people wear those clothes. I'm about the brand name. I don't ever shop secondhand. Only poor people shop secondhand. I'm going to buy only the good stuff. I'm not going to drive that vehicle or purchase that kind of thing because that's, you know, that's for the down and outs of society. Right? I won't shop and buy, you know, secondhand furniture. It has to be brand new from Lazy Boy. I won't take that lunch to school that my mom and dad made. That's embarrassing because everybody else there has 20 bucks in their pocket and they go and they buy lunch at the canteen. Or they go out to Pizza 73 across the road from the high school. Right? But in reality, they don't have anything. So they're poor, generally speaking, but they always pretend to be rich and give a facade. And the people that often are, if not children or kids, but like adults who function in this, only give the illusion of rich, of a lot of possessions and things because they're often leveraged to the hilt through lines of credits and credit cards. So the way our society works allows them to pretend to be rich, but in an actual fact, they're not. How does someone pretend to be poor? This person is often the frugal person, the miser, the cheap person who always wants a free pass in life. They're the kind of people that don't want to pay for anything, so they create situations and sob stories to avoid being generous. Another attribute of people that pretend to be poor, besides not wanting to be generous, is that they're master of getting sympathy from others. They often complain about how financially they're struggling, and they're often in tough times, again, so that there's no expectation on them to be generous. And as a result, they have others pay for all their things. And I think about that for you young kids, right? Often, you know, you've worked hard, you've got some savings from your chores and different things, and you go to 7-Eleven, and you've got that one friend that you know has savings in their account as well, but they always seem to never have money the day you go to 7-Eleven, right? They're the ones that, and then they want you to pay for their stuff. And so I've had to work my boys through that. What do you do when you have friends that are like, you know, constantly trying to mooch off of you, and that you know that they have as much money as you do, probably sitting at home? So you might think as an adult, well, that's not really sort of me or whatever. But so let me ask you this question, and it's a gut check question. I have to ask myself the same one. Which side would you likely fall on? Not looking at specifics, but if just in your own general disposition, the way you approach finances in life, are you the person that would more often slide to the side of pretending to be poor, not to be generous, or do you more likely want to give the illusion to people that you're wealthier than you are? And maybe it's neither, and praise the Lord for the work he's doing in your life. Okay, principle number 6. Pay back your debts when you have the means to do so. Proverbs 3:27-28. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it's in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it. If you are to withhold from someone what is due, when it's in your power to do it, that means that you have come to a determined amount that you know that you owe the person you borrowed the money from, or the creditor, or whatever it is, and you've got the money in your account to pay off the debt, but you've refused to do so. So let's say you owe $40 to somebody, like again, you owe someone 40 bucks that you borrowed money off to maybe buy something that you weren't expecting, and then you've got $50 in your account, and you're like, well, I'm not going to give them the 40 because I want to hold on to that as long as possible. So you have the cash to pay it back, the means to pay it back, but you choose not to. And so this can come in all sorts of ways, right? I mean, the list is endless about how you may have debts and then the means to pay them back. You know, it could be that, you know, you have a plumbing bill, a landscaping bill, an electrical bill, taxes, tickets from the peace officer, whatever. You've got the money and you won't pay them back. I want to tell you a cool story that happened to me about, this is probably about 10 years ago now. Maybe not quite that long, but 7 or 8 for sure. We had a men's Bible study on Tuesday nights at my house in Drake Landing when we used to live there. And we had a good group that always come. And one day, nobody showed up except 2 men. So like it was just crickets and 2 guys show up. And it's just, you know, and they were part of the study normally. But what was amazing was I just said to them, listen, do you want to continue on in our study in Genesis or do you want to do something different? And they were like, let's do something different. I'm like, well, what would you like to do? And they said, well, why don't we look at money? I said, cool, let's do money. So we started looking at Proverbs. And we were going through the Proverbs and I got to this one. And both of them kind of had this sort of like sheepish look on their face. And they both admitted that they were guilty of doing this. And so the one guy was in the middle of a real tough time in marriage, and him and his wife were getting divorced, and he had some legal bills that he had that he refused to pay. And the reason he refused to pay them was because he was sort of trying to spite his ex-wife. But he had the money to do it, but he was spiting his ex-wife to try to make her life miserable, and he wouldn't pay it back. The other guy had a speeding ticket or two, and was so frustrated by getting them, didn't think he deserved them or whatever, and he'd been intentionally withholding money, paying them back. The cool thing is, after the study, we ended, and then 7 days later, we had the study again, and both guys came to me and said, Andrew, I paid my bills this week. It was awesome. I mean, I think the Lord's hand was in that, right? 2 guys show up, want to talk about money, and they're both, how would I ever know that that was in their lives, right? Those are the kind of things you can easily hide, right? You'd never know those things just talking to someone in, you know, in the congregation. So yeah, those are good examples. I'm going to open up a huge can of worms here, and I'm going to do it intentionally because some of you like that. Some of you don't like that, so just work with my personality. And this is up for, you guys can discuss this, and I'm going to give you my personal preference, all right? But I think it's worth talking about. What do you do when you have debt and but also there's this principle that we're to honor the Lord with our wealth. We're to give to God. What do you do? I know Christian financial counselors that will say that in times when you're in debt, you shouldn't give to the Lord because you have to pay back your debts. And I understand the premise of why they say that. Probably a lot of it has to do with like your testimony and so on. My personal opinion, for what it's worth, maybe worth nothing, but it's what I is that I would still recommend that you give to the Lord. See, if you're in that kind of debt, that's because you have done finances independently outside of a crisis, like a flood or like an earthquake or something. But generally speaking, that's the exception. If we're in that kind of situation, or we've got massive debts that we have to pay back, it's our own doing. We've done money independent of God, not dependent on God. And so I would suggest to you that you still give to God. Because what you're saying to him is, Lord, I mishandled money. I know I have these debts out here, but I'm going to give to you anyway because I trust you to take care of my situation so that, and I believe that by you trusting you, that actually I will get out of debt quicker because of the way you promised to provide for me. I did that in the gym for the years that I was struggling. When I got started in the gym industry, I wasn't a Christian, but I became a Christian a couple years later. The problem was I'd made some financial decisions that were so huge that I couldn't really get out of them at the time. The renovation costs that I was told ended up being $30,000 more than my original quote. So when I went into the gym business, I had all this staff now and all this equipment and whatever, and I had $30,000 outstanding that I was not accounting for. The problem was the building was bought, the mortgage was in place, and there was no turning back. The worst part about it was the $30,000 had to go on a Visa card at 19.99% interest. Any of you who know the math on that are going, oh my goodness, like, that's Vancouver 1985 type stuff with the housing market. So I'm new to the Lord. I'm looking at this debt. I'm like, oh, like, God, what am I going to do? And I remember getting financial counsel. And I was like, Lord, I've done money my whole way, my way, and it's led me to this. I'm going to trust you. And I gave him, I honored him every week with money from, every month, I should say, with a gift. And that $30,000 was erased in 18 months. And I just praise God for it. Again, not everyone's going to agree with that counsel. And you'll find Christian financial counselors that say, no, you don't do that. But I can only speak from my personal convictions and my own experience. Principle number 7. Do not incur debt to the point where you owe more than you own. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. In order for us to understand the principle, we need to know, first of all, what lender's slave means, and remember that this is Old Testament language. So lender's slave comes from the Old Testament context, language borrowed from like the Israel and Jewish way of life. So in Old Testament times, if you were a Jew, and you were in a situation where you incurred debt to the point that you did not have the means to pay it back, your assets were less than your debt, you would become the slave to the lender. The person that lent you money and you could not pay back, you would become their slave. Now the cool thing in Israel's time is becoming their slave was kind of like an apprenticeship. It was a kind of a punishment in a way, but it was actually a good thing, because what would happen was you would then learn the financial savvy of the guy that lent you the money. And so you became like basically this apprentice. God had it in his economy that after 7 years, you were to be freed from that. So again, God wasn't saying this is permanent for you. In his mercy and grace, he said every seventh year, you release the people and they have to now go out on their own. Or if the person in debt really appreciated their time of those years under the master's hand, they could have their ear pierced with an awl, and they could become their slave permanently and stay under their care. So that's the lender-slave context. If you didn't have the means to pay back, you went into their debt and you worked for them. Coming to Proverbs then, in this context, Lady Wisdom is warning against coming into debt to the place where you owe more than your assets are. It's not speaking against all debt, because the Bible has principles for borrowing and lending, but it's speaking about debt to the point where you owe more than your assets align. So a good exercise to do is to take all of your assets that you own, all of the debts that you have, and then figure out when you add both of these together, are you in the lender-slave category, or are you in the positive net worth? If your net worth is below zero, you'd be in the lender-slave category. If your net worth is above zero, you're not. And that's important because all of us have mortgages, right? I heard Roger speak on this. He did a good job of talking about this. I'm not going to go into detail like he did. But a lot of us have mortgages. So you're not the lender-slave because you have a mortgage. You are a lender-slave, though, if your mortgage amounts exceed, like if the creditor has you come in and maybe you only have like 5% down on your mortgage and now you have to pay 7% realtor fees when you sell your house and stuff, now you're negative 2, right? So you have to consider all of those types of numbers when you do your asset calculation. Our country as a whole is walking a very thin line with this. I want to show you some staggering stats about the Canadian statistics about where we're at in debt. I did some research this week and had a conversation with Jeff, and he found one article too that was very helpful. But this is these are accumulated facts from different articles this week. Canada has the highest household level of debt amongst the G7 countries. In 2020, the average Canadian spent $1.71 for every dollar earned. And the source I just found this week, in 2023, that was 1.85. According to Equifax, at the end of 2020, the average Canadian owed $72,950, not including mortgage debt. And the average Canadian owes $20,000 in student loans, $21,000 in car loans, and $14,000 in personal loans. I want to show you another staggering stat from Sun Life Financial. This is average debt by age group. Under 35 years old, the average Canadian's carrying $69,000 in debt. 35 to 44, 105. 45 to 54, 130. 55 to 64, 80. And 65 plus, 49.9. Now, why would the 65 plus be of concern to us based on everything we learned last week? Because an inheritance is to be passed down in house and wealth. If at 65, that's generally the age that we stop working in Canada. Not always, but that's the general age, give or take a couple years. That means that people aren't in a place in Canada to pass down an inheritance and wealth to their children to the same degree that they could if they'd obey this principle. Our counsel is that you would be, obviously, no matter whether you're under 35 or 65 over, that number would be zero or close to it. And again, we're talking household debts, right? We're not talking mortgages here. This is crazy numbers, guys. The average Canadian. So when you look around Okotoks and you see the beautiful Ford 350 trucks and the Infiniti, SUVs, and just so you know, I have nothing against either of those. Maybe Roger doesn't like Ford, but I love the Ford 350 truck. the stats are that people driving these don't own them. That's what the stats are. They don't own them. It's borrowed money. And when the interest rates spike and crisis hits, it's game over. Is being in debt, though, like an outright sin? And I would say no, because I can't think of any passage in the Bible where debt is said to be sin. And also there were the lending and borrowing rules for debt. However, debt could be a symptom of other sins. So again, let's say I'm in debt because of greed. Let's say I'm in debt because I'm a covetous person. I think that would challenge where the answer would be yes. But if I'm in debt just for other reasons, I would say no. I think the Bible would support that either both ways. One other thing about debt, though, is it limits our capacity to be generous. Now, again, I'm not saying your starting wealth dictates generosity. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that it limits your capacity to be as generous as you could be. So you can have 10 bucks in your account, or you can have 1,000 or 100,000 in your account. You can still be generous with that money. But the ability to be generous and the frequency and the amounts is limited through debt. And God wants us to be generous people. And so we need to think about that as well. And the final one today is principle number 8. Be honest in your financial dealings. Better is the poor who walks in integrity than he who is crooked, though be rich. And if you look here, Proverbs below it, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 7 other passages in which this same principle applies. And I might have missed some, but here's what's amazing. This is a really big deal to Proverbs about being honest in financial dealings, so much so that there's a lot of references in the book about it. And like I said, I might have missed some. But the way this can happen, it can be expressed in so many different ways that I don't even know how to articulate them all. But let me just give you three examples from my personal life in the ways I've been tempted with myself and my kids in the last 3 months alone to be crooked. So I've had three things happen to me in the last 3 months, just, and I'm just like, yeah, like this is insane. So here's the temptation to become wealthier through dishonesty. I was at Sport Check in December, or just before December, and one of the boys wanted something sport related for an activity. I went to the area where the product was, picked them off the shelf. They happened to be full price. I think there was around $79.99 or something like that. It was about $80. We go to the till, but before me, I could hear before me a husband and wife talking, and they got this massive discount on their products ahead of me because he was in military service. So I didn't know that, but Sport Check has like discounts for people who have served in the military and honor people in those ways. So I was like, well, that's kind of cool. Like, they get discounts for that. So I walk up and I go to pay for my item. And my item was about $40 or $50 instead of $80. And the boys were with me. And I got this massive discount. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, I had no idea they were on sale. So they're all purchased. They're all bought, and I'm walking away to go out the door, and my kids are bragging about how awesome this is that the item was discounted. And I said to my kids, I said, I think that we got the discount from the military family, and it was extended to us by accident on the computer. And I'll tell you something, like, I was wanted so badly to walk out the door just to say I saved like $30-$40. Like, it was just like this. Remember the ugly green man, the Hulk I held up here about the flesh? That was like super strong in me. Like, the Hulk was like, you get out the door fast. And I was like, oh, like, what example am I going to set to my kids as well? So I go back to the till and I said to the girl, listen, I think that you might have made a mistake here. I don't think there's a sale. I think I might have been given the discount that the military family were given. And she looked and she goes, you're right. You did. And it was interesting because the two girls were debating. One said, just go anyway. And the other girl said, the manager was like, I think it was the manager was like, no, you better redo this. So we repaid and we paid the $80. But again, like, this is the temptation. But, you know, my experience with the Lord in the last, if I had $30,000 in gym debt with 19% interest and got out of that, what's to say, like, $30 is nothing to me from the experiences God has given me in terms of trusting him. Another one I'm always tempted in is the boys and their age shifting. Man, you get lots of discounts when your kids are really young, but the closer they get in age to teenagers and stuff like that, all of a sudden things change in price, don't they, kid, adults, right? You know, when you're 2 years old, you fly for free, and when you're 3 years old, you pay full price for a ticket, even though the kid sits in your lap virtually the whole flight you're on anyway. This drives me nuts, but whatever. You know, 12 and under or whatever, 9 and under, there's lots of discounts at the rec center. But when you're 13 or you change age groups, all of a sudden they double your fees. And I go, everywhere I seem to go with the kids, there's always this opportunity to lie about Jackson's age, particularly because he's 13. And, you know, so anyhow, but he could pass for 12 because, I mean, what's the difference between a month and your birthday, right? But anyway, so yeah, there's lots of opportunities to lie about his age and to lie about where he's at, and even with the other two as well. But again, because I always want the discount, and the ugly green man, the Hulk, wants those discounts. But again, I have to just always remember to not be dishonest in my financial dealings. Yeah, it's just way better. And the final one that happened just last week was taxes season. Janice is a homeschool consultant, and she gets personal. She can write off our vehicle and different expenses. And I was using Studio Tax, trying to get the taxes up to date for this year. And for the first time in years, Janice had to pay money. I'm used to getting refunds, and I had to pay, and I did not like that. The Hulk came out again. And there's a section where you can fill out personal expenses. And the temptation to add quite a few kilometers to her travels and meals and inflate some bills were very strong. But didn't. And remembered, again, more important to honor the Lord and trust Him than to walk in dishonesty. Entered the right numbers and paid the paid the government their due. Again, when are times tempting in this? Times of tempting to be dishonest are usually, I think, twofold in my thought process anyway. You often are tempted when you feel like it's just been an unfair season. Just so many unforeseen expenses that you just didn't think were coming. You know, there's those seasons where everything seems to be smooth for a while, and then there's a seasons where it's bill after bill, unexpected thing after unexpected thing. And it's usually at times like that when the opportunity for dishonesty happens. And you just feel like, I need a break. I deserve a break. I'm just going to lie this once just because I need a break. Other times it's when you've been saving for a long time to buy X, Y, or Z. And then this happens. And all of a sudden you've got to take care of that as opposed to the this that you were saving for. And there's frustrations around it. But again, Proverbs is saying to us, walk in Lady Wisdom, stay honest, trust Him to provide for you, and even in unexpected ways. So let's just look at the four lessons again in finality. Principle 5, do not be deceptive with your finances for the sake of personal gain. Pay back your debts when you have the means to do so. Do not incur debt to the point that you owe more than you own, and be honest in your financial dealings. Amen. Next week was Easter Sunday, and we'll be doing something special with Easter, but thanks to Dan Jensen, he got me thinking about a whole new category of finances that I've never looked at, but I'm going to preach on, and so you'll be interested. We're going to talk about wise investing. Does the Bible speak about investing and what are wise investments versus poor investments? And so that's going to be that'll be our final sermon in the Proverbs series. And I realize I'm leaving a lot out. There's a lot more that could be said. But at least now you've got your head thinking in different categories. And if you approach Proverbs, you're going to find a lot more principles than what we've even covered.